So yesterday we said before we continue our new subject matter or continue our homework, we would take a few minutes to take questions. Some of the devotees who had questions, see, they haven't come yet. So try to be on time, since we have a short block of time to try to do as much as we can. Was the microphone? Okay, hand it to the mother in the back.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Yes, Srila Prabhupada said to the devotees that if you follow my instructions, you chant 16 rounds offenselessly and follow the four regulative principles and engage in devotional service all your life, you will go back to Godhead in one lifetime. And the devotees were asking, no, he said, at first he said, you're supposed to be 100% purified to go back to Godhead, and then the devotees were perplexed, and finally he said 75%, I believe. And I want to ask you, to which level does this correspond? Like, is it Bhava Bhakti? Is it, you know, what kind of Bhakti is that, like 75% as Sri Prabhupada?
Well, it's similar to the fact that if we absorb ourselves sufficiently in any one of the ninefold process, one can be able to become fully realized. But then we ask ourselves, but why are we following all these nine things? And even though we follow all of the nine, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, etc., we don't follow any of them 100%. There's so much aparad, so much, you know, fear and negligence and procrastination and lack of intensity and sensitivity. But still, we have all nine. So it's somewhat similar. It's like we were discussing the other day, that one goes back to Godhead by Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, and, you know, and by Kripa. Well, Prabhupada says that, you know, sometimes one gets an honorary degree. Now, that's rare, but it's possible. We should not minimize the rules and the regulations and the rigorous involvement in the process. But at the same time, we should understand that four rules and regulations do not take us back to Godhead. Four rules and regulations really are just helping us to be proper humans, properly absorbed in the mode of goodness. But if we don't follow four rules and regulations, then there's no question of us going back. So we're not adherents, you know, to karma kanda or karma mimamsa philosophy, that we do such and we get such reciprocation categorical to what we do. Because we actually don't want that. We don't really, especially in Kali Yuga, we don't really want Krishna's law. We want to follow the laws. But we want mercy. And mercy means that you get more than what you deserve. It means there's more consideration, kindness. There's more understanding about your situation, the mitigating circumstances. It is not just taken only on the face value of such. And that's so much of what Lord Chaitanya's and Lord Nityananda's involvement in this universe is that where Krishna says, Saradama Parati Yajna Mame Kam Saranam Braj, etc., surrender and abandon all varieties of religion and have no fear, and of course don't hesitate and don't worry. And as you do this, Krishna has promised that he will respond as we surrender, and he will reward. But we see that the mood of Mahaprabhu and the mood of Lord Nityananda is give them all opportunity, qualified or unqualified. Give everybody a chance to hear Bhakti Ras. Give everyone a chance to have some seeds planted in their consciousness, and give them all a chance to be able to come back. At least give them the opportunity. And so, yes, we are more in the mood of the sparrow who was determined, who wasn't just waiting for mercy or for grace, who distinctly involved himself in a very focused way, but in no way had the capacity to drink up the whole ocean. But still, the determination was fixed in doing that. So by that kind of anti-material focus beyond the orthodox and rational level of Dharma or general religiosity, Kamakanda, then there was amazing reciprocation. And so we're like this. We realize, like Rupa Goswami in his Ashabandha prayer, as he's praying, he doesn't have qualifications, doesn't have love of God. But at the same time, he's fixed. And realizing that, hey, it's possible, in spite of that Krishna's mercy is so great. You know, that it's available. And the mercy is so great, and he's determined, it's there, and I'm going to get it. I'm going to experience it. So any other questions? Some of you come in 15, 20 minutes late every day. Try to be on time. Mm-hmm.
Precisely to attain spiritual, well, a pre-spiritual body in Gokul, what is the level that we, like, according to the list enunciated in Madhurya Kadambini, what is the level required to enter Gokul Vrindavan?
We have to become...
Yes, Gokul Vrindavan, yes.
One has to become a Sura Bhakta. I mean, there's no imperfection in the spiritual world. So now the question is, to what degree does the spiritual master complement what one has? It's just like somebody's drowning in the river or in the ocean. So they're in the ocean and they're shouting, help, help, help. And so they have alerted someone. But then the person throws out the tire, throws out the rope. And so they have attracted help. But still, they have to grab and they have to hold on. They have to be pulled in. And so something about their own posture, own position, their own cry, their own strength attracts the help. And then once the help is also there, still based on now their own acceleration and accepting that help and such. See, if we feel that what we do ourselves is sufficient, then we're, one, minimizing grace. Two, we're thinking we have perhaps beyond what our real quality is. And three, that kind of arrogance is not the mental culture that, you know, that a bhakta has, you know, genuine see, devotee has. But it's almost the opposite. One feels unqualified, unworthy. But now, I think we discussed it last year in the forgiveness course, there is a huge difference between low self-esteem and spiritual humility. Low self-esteem is paralyzing, and it's self-centered, it's egocentric. It's about what one doesn't have, what isn't going right in one's life. It's about one's own problems and issues and troubles. It's like one of the exercises we did yesterday. We had, you know, we took that break and we had everyone just to address three major issues, problems, complexities, disturbance in their life, just go for it. So you just download it, you know, on your partner. And then we did the exercise of having you leave, which will continue today, having you leave the body and having only 1 hour. Then you saw that many of those things that you were so much accepting that they're so problematic really were not as problematic as we're allowing them to be. And then as we did the exercise, we also saw certain things that we need to give more time and attention to. Certain things we need to distract ourselves, to pull ourselves away from. And for some of you, most of us, it was an emotional experience, because as you had to send that message back to two important people in your life, then for many of you, you transfix yourself in such a way as if it was almost a reality. And that's why some of you were crying, because it was a very emotional, and realizing that if you're at a point in your life where you have to make this kind of decision, and you have this little limited amount of time, and last experience with those, significant others, that will be quite overwhelming. So we want to always act in such a way that we're not worthy, but we want to also act in such a way of knowing that it's possible and it's available, that someone should be thinking, somebody can go back to God here in this lifetime. Why not me? Krishna's mercy is there. We've been given everything that's necessary. And furthermore, we should remind ourselves sometimes is that becoming Krishna consciousness is not really a big deal. The big involvement is how much we have accepted acculturation, how much we've accepted an unhealthy, unnatural lifestyle. Being Krishna conscious is what is natural. We're discussing how, and a few people are new, so we'll do a quick summary. Now my voice is a little stronger. The last few days I wasn't able to talk so much. Inflamed lung. This class is about Die to Live. And we're focusing on Divya Mata, or the fact that there is divine madness. That we're always going to be mad one way or the other. And so we're either mad, sense gratification, and we're captured by all the vagas, and we're controlled and manipulated and addicted. Or we are mad for wanting to dive deeper and deeper into the ocean of devotion. We're either possessed by the influence of the three modes of material nature, which is like death, real death, because it's minimizing the real vibrance of life that's associated with nourishing the soul. Or we are possessed and just always fixed in being in this world but not being of this world, and always being fixed and keeping the goal in mind, and always being fixed and waiting for the next higher experience to come upon us. And always being fixed in a raptured, captivated mindset and thinking of the service to the divine couple. And so we are looking at the idea of dying daily. That Prabhupada is explaining to us in the Bhagavatam 1.9.43. How life, human life, is about dying like Bhishma. That the whole of life is just a preparation or different aspects of the big test. Life is nothing more than becoming fixed in consciousness, where one becomes like the residents of Vrindavan. So all, as you're saying, all the things we do and we reflect on, all the plans and all the social and economic and political and psychological, all the things we do, all the religious, spiritual things we do, that really, what it really epitomizes is that it is the various steps and activities we're taking each day to see how ready we are for becoming natural again and being able to return home. And so we're doing all these interactive kind of exchanges and reflections, because we're here every day. We're not the body. We're seeing death all over the place. And these last, couple of years or so, it's impacting our whole movement much more. We're having devotees coming now regularly to Vrindavan and dying. Having our grandparents and mothers and fathers dying, and now our own devotees are dying. And now this year we've just now arranged for the Samadhi of Gokavinda Maharaj. And then we see tomorrow Krishna Maharaj. And then Shuddha Maharaj is coming and possible passing. And then we asked some of you, how many of you have experienced someone, been there with someone left their body? We saw that most of you haven't. And so it's still so theoretical in so many ways for most devotees. Then we kind of esoterically ask you, how many of you feel that you are in contact with somebody who has left their body? And a few of you raise your hand. For you, it's a little more of a reality. Understand that we are much more than just living at this time. My life is much more variegated than what goes on in this material or these kind of material universes. And we explain how actually we're all in contact with the acharyas, the parampara. We're all in contact with those whose movement this really belongs to, the Goswamis, the Madhavendra Puri, and others. And their blessings are always there. And just waiting for some more and more souls to catch up with some of the mercy. So we went over Chiranjeeva. We looked at first some of the entities who never die. Some of the personalities in our culture, Vaishnava culture, that never die. Certain category of beings. I know, I guess some of our papers are there. Lights are off, so I don't know what they can be able to see. Maybe we can just hold these up for a second. So people get a glimpse. I see a few new faces. So after we went over some of those who never die, these were some categories. Narada, Markandeya, Vyas, Hanuman, the electricity's off. Dhruva, Ashwatthama, Narayan Rishi, Brahma Bala, goes into his death, but he does die. Bali Kripa, Janavi Devi, Parasuram, Sivabhushan. And we discussed some things about their particular life, their existence, etc. We put them in a special category. And then we looked at what's called Mitra Sanjeevani. Special situations and cases of personalities where there was death and they were brought back to life. So there's some very famous pastimes. There was such Srivastava's son, Chitraketu's son, cowherd boys, Pandavas, Ajamil, Sri Sarangadev, Sandipani Muni's sons, Parikshit, Haridasa Kaur, Devaki's sons, the Brahmanas who went to King Agrasena, Janavi, etc. Anyway, we've discussed all of that in different ways to look at what significant themes are in these stories, what message we're able to get out of reflecting on these particular pastimes, realizing that Krishna comes himself sometimes to reclaim the souls, to help propagate the Yuga Dharma. We see that plenary expansions, avatars, Chaktivesh, and we see that he empowers entities in different ways. Some are Nitya Siddhas. But why? In essence, all of this is designed to reclaim the wayward souls. So much of this is designed to make it much more accessible for us to return in a more expedient way. Therefore, how they come, what they do while they're here, and how they leave is all important. In each category, it gives and leaves a message for us. So what we are today, we gave you homework assignments each day, and we were a little behind because one of the assignments we gave was we divided devotees in twos and in pairs to look at some pastimes of devotees passing and to look again as we did earlier in another type of assignment, we asked one in the group to give a short summary of that pastime, the second person to help us in offering some significant lessons from that pastime. So we haven't discussed that yet, and we'll go into that the second half of the class. So we've gone to those souls who never die. We've gone to cases of reviving an entity and looking at the particular pastime. And now we want to look at some classical examples, very special passing away stories, to look closer at what is the message there. How can this help us in thinking and acting like these souls? How can this give us more impetus to become more excited about the goal that's attainable? How can this give us more ability to see where we are and where we need to go? How can this allow us to be able to become much more daily into dying or giving death to the enemies of the mind, giving death to the three modes of material nature, which allows real life? So the class Die to Live, or we could say How to Acquire Divine Madness, is just trying to help us to look closer at transformation. Why are we here? What are we doing? How do we do that more effectively? How do we capitalize more on what we have? How do we be more mindful each day? How do we begin to evaluate more so many of the things that the mind is constantly dealing with? We did one exercise. We just made a little break from the general discussion. And we showed right in front of all of us how powerful our thoughts are. So we had one guru coolie to go out. We brought him in. And first ask all of you to just think good thoughts about him. And then we shifted and had you all to focus for a moment and think negative thoughts. We apologize for that. And you saw how we thought positively about him, that he was empowered. As we did the test, he had so much strength. And he did not know what was going on, but we did. And we were thinking negative. We saw how he was so disempowered. To help us to realize that as we're thinking about others and thinking about ourselves, we are influencing the results. If we had more time, we would do an internal dialogue, series of work of discussions and interactions with you, just to help you see. Because by normal considerations, most people's internal dialogue is about 85% negative. See, more than what we do and what we say is what we tell ourselves. We can do so many things externally. We can say so many things externally. But who we really are has much more to do with what we are constantly telling ourselves. The internal mantra, the internal conversation. And this is why some people have constant, similar kind of failures, even though they have all kind of facilities and all kind of opportunities. Because in spite of the opportunities, in spite of the facilities, that they have already convinced themselves that they're going to fail. They've already convinced themselves that they're going to be abandoned. They've already convinced themselves that they're going to have some deviation, some problem. They're going to have this or that. And so they bring that because mantra is very powerful. And so we just showed you in like 2 minutes just how your thoughts affect someone else. And similarly, your thoughts affect you. And other people's thoughts affect you. To the degree that you are focused or possessed, as you are very possessed in more powerful thoughts and more powerful desires than those thoughts that are of not the same intensity, will have less or no effect. So everywhere we go, we're getting bombarded by a certain conscious field based on the thoughts and the activities of that environment. And while we're also emphasizing this kind of course, is to help devotees to kind of own up more to what's going on in their own lives, to see how they have much more power and influence than they normally think, but also to see how much we're connected, how much we influence each other, and how much our success is interlocked in so many ways. We're seeing how every time someone falls down, like sends a wave throughout the whole of the institution, and it makes it harder for each person in his own devotion. Every time somebody is really more, becoming more genuine, excelling more in their Krishna consciousness, it acts as a way also of bringing a current that makes it easier for everyone. But we have a low trust culture. We have a low faith. Faith is not very strong. Even many, many projects, many, many temples, many, many devotees, if they had a viable alternative, they would take it. I've seen so many temples, so many places where devotees are living in the temples and they're living there because they don't really have a viable alternative, not that they're really that fixed in what they're doing. Or the cases where people are having so much pain or having so much fear or having so much doubts, and they're suffering peacefully, so to speak, or they're suffering quietly. It doesn't work like that. It's important that we do not repress whatever, but that we transform. It's important that we have relationships where we can reveal what is going on to get help, to get feedback. And if not, then we have constant inauthentic community, inauthentic associations. Because often even the person who disagrees with you can help you even more than someone who is your so-called friend. Sometimes our so-called superficial friendship is just sanctioning and rationalizing and justifying each other's whatever, normative patterns. And sometimes our friendship is so superficial that if we tell the person what we really feel, we'll be afraid that we'll lose their so-called friendship. And then we settle in constantly for mediocrity. We have a duty. It is our service to grow, to become more devotional, and to lovingly put pressure on ourselves and on others, put pressure on the environment for higher acceleration. We have a duty to be servants of servants. Dasos mi dasu dasonas. And being the servant means that we are concerned about the genuine well-being of another. Because we're concerned about the genuine well-being of another, the best way we can be concerned about the other person is to bring a better ourself into the relationship. The more that we better ourselves, the more that we can give greater quality service. Otherwise, we can be very concerned, but be sentimental. In order to make a difference, in order to have quality service, we have to bring better ourselves to be able to connect in that environment to make the difference. So, we wanted to spend about 5-10 minutes more before we go back to Vrindavan and then to our pastimes. We had also an assignment where we had devotees to leave the body. Every day we're doing something about leaving the body, but also coming back. So we're getting second, third, and fourth chance, which normally the person doesn't get. Some people, they have a near-death experience. Some people come back once or twice, but not like this. So there were a few of you who didn't get a chance to share with us viewing your own funeral. So the samskara, the ceremony is going on, and people are talking about you. So we want one or two more people to share what they would feel comfortable. And some of you who are just coming, you can join this. We're asking devotees to share some of the things that they would feel very comfortable in hearing others say about them after they have left the body. So a hypothetical situation that you're able to hear and to see what is going on as people are speaking about what you meant to them, what you meant to community. And so devotees were sharing in different ways some of the things. And we're not, you know, just trying to be pseudo-humble, but we're looking at what really would you feel comfortable. Because there is going to be a distinct time when every one of us will depart from our families, from our communities, and people are going to reflect on our existence in that particular lifetime. And it is so significant how Vaishnavas are thinking about the passing entity. Especially in most of our part, where our quality or our situation is going to need to be complemented. You realize that leaving the body and being almost there and having so many wonderful souls thinking lovingly about you, praying, wishing you well, being so appreciative of your existence, along with the brokership of your spiritual master, can bring you back to Godhead. Every case is individual. It is possible for someone to be so loyal, so faithful, in the service of Srila Prabhupada, and still have some areas of some incoherence. And for Prabhupada to compliment, to reach out, and to bring them back. And there are cases that has already happened. The relationship between guru and disciple is very awesome. The power of the parampara is very awesome. Because really, it is really only about Krishna. Now that sounds strange. Everything is Krishna and his parts and parcels. What is it? Bahiranga, Shakti, Tatasha, Antaranga. And so there is no difficulty in Krishna bringing back in connection another one of his parts. But the difficulty is how much we obfuscate, how much we confuse, how much we act in such a way to make that not happen. And so, as we are having the proper desire, Krishna in the heart knows. So Krishna arranges guru, a door, for us to come to so that we can genuinely be able to meet him, join up with him on the other side. And so if disciple is proper, if guru is proper, then where is the difficulty? And if either one of them is not proper, then where is the victory? There will be all kinds of setbacks in different ways. But we are collectively associating in the sanghas. We're associating guru-disciple relationship as Krishna is reaching out and allowing us to practice in our association with each other and allowing us to practice with the agency of guru. You understand? Practice. Can you be a good musician? Can you be a good sportsman if the quality of your practice is poor? You think about it, it's like we do it from day to day with certain poor quality, and we think, oh, we're going to go back to Godhead. Now, if the quality of practice is poor, then the performance is not going to be on target. If we're not daily dying, if we're not daily at the end of the day, or the beginning of the day, or the middle of the day, if we're not at some point thinking, hey, I'm doing all of these things, but have to simplify it. Because I'm not the controller. And ultimately, Krishna can take it all away. And ultimately, anything that is more important to us than our commitment, if you have to translate to anyone, it's okay, just go on. If anything that we're doing that occupies our consciousness more than our connection with our devotion, then that means another body. And so we can see that somehow in the last life we didn't do so well. Because, you know, we all got these bodies. So that means we weren't mad enough for Krishna in the previous life. We had too many things that were so important, that were based on material nature, that some of that stuff we had to come back and to experience again. So we have to look now and think, when you did the exercise of what was so important in terms of problems. Some of you really just have to look closer at those things that were prominent, stuff you have to work on. So let's have about two to share the experience of what they would feel, and this is for you, for us all to learn from it also, but it's mainly for you who are sharing this, to make it more of a reality that you extend yourself in that situation temporarily. You've left the body, and now you're reflecting, hearing what you feel good about, what you think would like to have people to think and to say. I'm gonna kind of see that we have more people to participate. Let me just call one or two people so we can go on to the next assignment. Lakshmi Rupa, is she here? Lakshmi Rupa Devi Nasi? You have a volunteer? Okay. Gopal? That's right. I gave you a rain check from yesterday. Go ahead. We create our future by what we do in the moment. So even these kind of reflections, we're creating part of the future. Okay, go.
Gopal Das was a very nice ex-gurukuli, even though he went through his rebel time after spiritual education. It helped him grow and develop into the person we all know and love. Dedication and determination and giving his best try at serving Guru and Gauranga's mission were his life's goals. Now here at the bank of the Jamuna, we all will remember Gopal for his sweet, thunderous mridanga playing with the 24-hour kirtan in Krishna Balar Mandir, helping and assisting when and wherever he could. His generosity will be missed. Being an example of a Gurukuli success story, he inspired many of the youth to take to Krishna consciousness. Praying to their divine couple, Sri Radha Shamasunda and Sri Sri Gaurani Tai, we all know Gopal is there in the spiritual world, drumming in that endless kirtan ras.
Go up, Bhaktivinoda Ki. So there's a personal reflection for you. So you think in terms of what things need to be put in place so that this can become a reality. We have another volunteer? Okay.
Mahima Maidas inspired me so much in my spiritual life because in such a fascinating way she involved her nature in a transcendental service of Krishna and for Guru Maharaj. She lived in very simple manner, according to the principle that Prabhupada taught us, that we should live simple living and high thinking. Because of that, she was a big inspiration for me. That's it.
Prabhupada Vindagi. Okay, now I want to shift to the second reflection we were having, is that we had you to be in dyads yesterday, and we proposed a hypothetical situation that we've transposed ourselves to Vrindavan, and that each of us, we found that we have only 1 hour. 1 hour to live. And so we ask you to share with your partner that there are two people who you want to send special communication to. Two people who are significant in your life, two of the most significant people, who you'll never see again in this lifetime, and who you'll never even get a chance to talk to, because they're not with you while you are making this transition. But that your partner is with you and you're giving the partner message, special message to send to these two special people. And then we asked, we began, our time was short, but then some of you asked you to share one of those persons who you sent a message to. So we want to continue with this for a while. And any those who just come, you participate with us. So you are in Vrindavan and you are leaving the body. It's all over now. All of your austerities, all of the knowledge you've acquired, all the devotional service you've done, now it's all come to head. All the interactions you've had with friends, relatives, spouse, children, etc. That you have 1 hour before you out of this body and you are sending a message to some very special person that you want to send a message to. So we want you just to share with us the message that you're sending to and who that person is. And of course the beauty of this is a couple of things. One, to look a little closer at some things that we perhaps need to resolve that we haven't resolved. To look closer at being able to express our appreciation. Appreciation is so significant in the acceleration on the royal path of bhakti. Even when there is problems, even when there is difficulties, even when there is challenges, especially. Because if we are somehow missing or minimizing all the wonderful things that are happening, then we will get too distracted by the challenges or the difficulties. If we are not daily grateful, then we're actually denying Krishna's mercy. We're in some ways being angry at Krishna that he's not fulfilling our particular plan in our particular way that we feel that he should be reciprocating. If we're not having constant gratitude, we block ourselves from divine intervention. We block ourselves for faster growth. We block ourselves from so much support that is always available. But we also have to be in a posture to be able to receive it. When we are appreciative, we turn the good things into more and more auspiciousness. And we turn the bad things into something positive. Because even from the bad things, it'll become such a learning experience for us. Even from the difficult things, we will learn or become clear in why not to do and have that happen to us again. Become more sympathetic and empathetic to be able to help someone else who's going through that. We'll understand so much more how the modes of material nature and how Kali intervenes and interacts. We'll be so much clearer of why we have to be more afraid of Maya, why we have to be more determined and focused and in remembrance of the higher. So this, you know, for many of us, this is can be a little intense because as you really focus your mind in reflecting on this as a possible reality, then it hits us in a certain level of consciousness. So we want some of you to share. And the more open and honest you are with yourself, the more the experience, you know, will have benefit. The more to help you to focus on, you know, on those significant others about what's going on with you and them right now. Because we do have the second and the third chance. And by owning up to more of what's going on, then we can see better what is needed, what we can distinctly do. Because often, sometimes, the best way to change a situation or to change another person is to change ourselves. And sometimes we allow some particular problems in a relationship to overshadow the whole relationship. Or sometimes we have given so much attention to secondary things. And if we really were at the confrontation of death, so many of those things would have almost no significance to us. Okay. Mother, you can share.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, if you please let me, yesterday my spiritual sisters and my spiritual what do you call, cousins, they give a very nice idea to me, because yesterday my mind was white, but today, because the mercy of these devotees, I catch the idea. And one of the devotees say, I'm thinking of my mother, and another devotee say, I'm thinking of my guru. This is very wonderful, because it,
but and you, I want you to hone into yourself, though.
Yes.
I want you to look at you leaving and what you would say, who you would say
yes.
something to.
I hope that I can live like thinking on my Guru Maharaj, because first it is Vrindavan, and my second thought will be...
No, I want you to send an actual message. Just as when you had your partner, you were supposed to tell your partner a message to give to that person. Mm-hmm. So if your Guru Maharaj or your mother or sister or brother or whoever, you give the message, the actual message that you would want them to hear.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj, that you give me the opportunity to be in this movement. Thank you for helping me. And please, my next life, I will like to have contact with you. And the second message I will say, Madaji calls Anadi in my country, please take my deities and take them to the temple. But I hope that I realize Vrindavan, and also I don't have to think in another things like family, whatever.
Go back to Vrindaji. Someone else? Volunteer? Okay.
Well, my message would be to you, Gurudev, and if I have this 1 hour, it would be that...
Don't make it theoretical. Send a message, like you're
okay.
sending it to that person.
Dear Gurudev, thank you for your love and guidance. Thank you for your mercy, and I'm very sorry that I'm taking this for granted, and not showing my appreciation, but not following instruction, and not being enough authentic and serious devotee. And I'm sorry because of this, because that what you show is something that is really pure and really have, like, it's treasure, like really of Veda. And I hope in the, my next existence I would continue and do better. And to be a message.
Go about the vintage.
Can I change
one? You got a third chance. Sometimes we. Yeah. We've had literally in some cases hundreds of thousands of births, so that last birth is gone. But if you want, you have another experience.
This message is to you, Father. For always being there, toughest times, and loving me, you know, for who I am, no matter what, unconditionally, and helping me in my spiritual life as well, or I wouldn't be in the position I am in now if it wasn't for you. And I just hope and pray that I can live up to your as much as you know. For better, for worse.
So here's a Guru Kuli sending a message to his devotee father. If he had that 1 hour, then he would send this special message to his father. Okay.
I'm going to send a message to my husband again. That I just want to thank you because you trusted in me and made many changes that assisted in me advancing in my Krishna consciousness and increasing my Vaishnava association and being able to serve the Vaishnavas and the spiritual master better. And I just want to say thank you.
Okay. So someone who really doesn't really want to share. You're the one who needs to share the most. All right? So this is all voluntary, but, you know, someone who really has more difficulty doing this, it'll be more beneficial for you to be able to focus and such.
I would send, I send my message to Madhavananda Prabhu, who's right here. I don't want to embarrass him because he's a very humble devotee, but, and that my message is actually an apology that for my behavior, and I won't go into it, but that I won't go into it.
No, go into it if you can, if you don't mind. Just to summarize it, send it to him. You're leaving the body in 1 hour. Somebody is there. You want to send a message to? Well, I really can't go into it, but you tell him that I was thinking about him as I'm leaving, but I can't go into it, but he'll go to that person and say, well, he couldn't go into it. He had a message for you before he left. It's very important. I was in the room just before he left. He couldn't go into it, but I want you to know that you were definitely being thought about.
You've given yourself 100% to helping a person of the lowest class, and I thank you, and I apologize for not being able to reciprocate on practically any level, and I'm just thankful that somebody is selfless in existence. And please apologize to all the Vaishnavas I've ever met.
Don't just make this only an exercise, but those significant personalities that come to your mind that you would want to communicate something to, then do it. Work on it. Address the person. Let them know now how important they are to you. Fix up whatever, you know, needs to be fixed. Change whatever needs to be changed. Because we've had many, many lifetimes where some issues weren't fixed, weren't changed. And some of those were distinctly responsible for us taking another body. You know, sometimes some of the greatest sadness when someone leaves the body and those who are near to them are crying and very distressed and depressed. Many times, more of what is going on is some incompleteness in the relationship. And now they have no chance to do this with the person, to say this, to adjust this situation. They have no chance to, now they're forced to kind of be more independent when they were maybe too dependent on the situation, on the person or whatever. So a lot of it is very selfish. So one is in great anxiety. How could this person leave me in this way? But for his devotees, when someone leaves, we jai, victory. And we just want to one day be able to join up with them. And we want to have such strong relationships, such quality relationships, that even when someone leaves, that not only will they be victorious, but they will also still be in connection with ourselves. We need as much help as we can possibly get in getting out of this prison. Just think, you know, you were taking a course. Sometimes somebody fails the course again and again and again. They need some help. They need help so that the next time they take the test, that they will distinctly be successful. Some people, they take the driving test, and they fail, and they study, and they try to drive a little bit, a little practice, and they fail again. And Everybody need help. They need to be more fixed in what's necessary. So they take it again, that they'll be guaranteed, you know, to be successful. But if the practice is not proper, or they're not being wholesomely aware of what the test is going to entail, then there's a great chance, you know, that they won't be ready. Someone else? Okay.
This is my good friend Akshay, and I just want to take this opportunity to thank you so much for introducing me to spiritual life and to bringing me along out of nowhere in a country where there was no spiritual practice. And I'm sorry for all the difficulties that occurred over the past few years, but I just take this opportunity to thank you for being there for me in the beginning. Thank you.
We think about it, in many cases, some of those persons we want to thank the most, you know, are different types of gurus, Brahmana Daksha gurus, Shiksha gurus, Diksha gurus, someone who's important in our life to bring us into Krishna consciousness. Sometimes someone who's really been the most important, impacting in our life in the most significant way, has given us the greatest problems. And sometimes we have someone who's in our life that just constantly gives us anxiety. And we may be karmically connected with that individual in some unusual way, and that they're really there, you know, there to help us. We were mentioning several times how nobody can hurt you as much as those who you love and care for the most. Nobody can disappoint you and wound you more than those who you open up to and who you give the most to and who you expect the most from. But nobody can make you as happy as those who you care about the most and give the most to also. And as those significant others are the ones who are the ones that we'll be sending the messages to, or the ones who will... Don't try to run out, Siddhi. You're not going to call you next, right? Hand her the microphone. Can I give it to you? I was unfortunately projecting on her and she caught it. I projected too much. Send her out. Anyone else? We have maybe one more before we go to the next assignment. Okay. See if Siddhi will come in and share hers before I go to the next.
This one would go to my daughter, Colleen, and I would say to her that I love her very much, and even though we share different beliefs, that I would still want her to love her brother, because her brother and I have taken a path of Krishna consciousness, and I would want her to love him just as much. Because when she loves him, she'll be loving me also. And that I want her, both of them, to still believe in they're still believing in the same gods, and that nothing should change between the two of them. And that somewhere down the line, if she keeps an open mind, she'll understand that they're still believing and loving in the same God, and that the more that they love each other, they'll realize that they're just loving me even more, and that I just don't want anything to change between them, and that I'll always be with them.
So give a little more time to that right now. You do have a second chance. Okay, I want to go to the next assignment, but I don't feel I should. I think I need to take 5 minutes more with this. So someone who really doesn't want to share, I want you to share. Okay. I don't want to call on you, but someone who really, really feels uncomfortable in sharing, somebody who really feels that they don't want to go there, huh? I want you to share. Okay. You've already shared, so you don't feel that uncomfortable. Okay. All right, yourself? Okay, Mother.
I mean, when I spoke to my partner yesterday, this is a different person. Actually, it's to my son.
See, we're also doing this for you, but we're all learning from this. We're growing from this. We are a community. We are a family. Even though we don't know each other sometimes. But every devotee is taking birth. Huh? Special birth. There are billions of souls on this planet. And there's small number of devotees who are saying yes to Krishna. Who are saying yes and accepting this Sanatana Dharma. So souls have come from all over different universes. Some souls have been waiting for hundreds and hundreds of years to take birth in this time. Some souls have even been together in different ways. So we are much more of a community and a family than we sometimes think about. So when you're sharing something, you're sharing for our benefit as well. Yes.
Okay, actually this is for my 3.5-year-old son. About a week ago, he said to us, Papi, I'm really afraid to leave my body. And he asked why. And he said, I'm afraid I won't go back to Krishna. And he thought, wow, a 3.5-year-old boy, he's... Sorry. Dear Vamsi, my soul has to leave my body and go back to Krishna. I But maybe Krishna has got something. Please don't be sad. My soul will always be watching you and looking after you. If you listen to Papi and follow what he tells you, you will become a wonderful devotee and also go back to Krishna, because Papi is the best devotee I know. You have helped me so much to become a better devotee too. You have made me so happy and I'm so proud of you. Even though I scold you sometimes, I know that you are a good, clever boy. And you will be a very nice devotee. I love you very much, and I'm waiting with Krishna to see you.
Wonderful. Sadhu. Your son is 3 years old. Huh? Wonderful. Okay, enter. Okay, so we'll take a few more tomorrow. It's volunteer, even though we're trying to coach you, but it's volunteer. Now, I want to just call on the pastime and the two devotees who had the pastime. You come up to the front. So one of you is going to just summarize very, very briefly the particular pastime of that personality passing, leaving the world. The other one is going to share... just one or two important themes, one or two important lessons from that particular pastime that we can all be able to grasp or to benefit from. Okay, first are the two devotees who have, Gopal Chakravarti. Are they here? Or is one of them here? Only one? Anyone here who gave to you? Okay, who's your partner? He's not here. Is your partner here? What was your part? Your part was sharing the pastime or? Okay, why don't you, you're going to have to do both real quick. Why don't you summarize it in just less than a minute and then share with us 30 seconds what was one or so important themes, you know, from that particular story? Well, I'll give you a break until tomorrow then. Okay, maybe tomorrow your partner will be here also. Who has the story of Lakshmi Priya? The devotee's here. Whoever, come up. Are you here? Is anyone here who had the passing of Lakshmi Priya? They're not here? Okay. The devotees are coming and going each day. Who had the story of, let's see, Haridas Thakur?
Through my dad, he's not here.
He's not here?
But I can't go the past time.
Okay, you can do it for him? Father like son, son like father. So you just encapsulate, summarize quickly, but give us something important lesson from the passing of Haridas.
Okay, I never actually read the pastime, but I did a play on it, so that should be pretty good.
That's better. You kind of have lived it, huh?
Well, if I remember correctly, Lord Chaitanya would go and visit the Haridas Thakur every day. And then after a while, then one day Haridas Thakur was sick, and Lord Chaitanya asked him what was his disease or something, if I remember correctly. And Haridas Thakur was saying, I've got a disease, my disease is that I cannot finish my rounds. So his concern was not his body, but was his spiritual practices, like that. And finally, I don't remember the circumstances, but somehow or other, Haridas Thakur died in the arms of Lord Chaitanya while saying, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And then Lord Chaitanya took the body of Haridas Thakur, had the Kirtan Harinam, buried his body, and then had a big feast, and he personally served everybody. So that's basically the story.
There were some important themes, lessons on this story.
Important themes, we can see that Haridas Thakur was awarded by his pure devotion, and Lord Chaitanya reciprocated. He was awarded by his pure devotion that he chanted the names Sri Krishna Chaitanya and looked upon the face of his beloved Lord while he was passing. And Lord Chaitanya also reciprocated with his devotion by glorifying Haridas Thakur as the Namacharya, the greatest teacher of the holy name, and thus now he's glorified by all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas as the topmost teacher of the holy name. And we can also see the love of the Lord towards his devotees, that Haridas Thakur couldn't see Lord Jagannath, but Jagannath personally came and saw him in the form of Lord Chaitanya. And and the power also of separation from the Lord, because Haridas Thakur wanted to die prematurely, in a sense, because he didn't want to feel the separation of not having the association of Lord Chaitanya. So the power of the separation of the Lord.
Haridas Thakur ki. Remember, these are eternal associates of the Lord. So they come into this world not to perform, but they come for very special reasons, how they live, and also how they depart. It's very, very significant. So as we reflect on their leelas, we're able to somehow to try to connect more with what they have offered to us. We want to be more mindful as we're trying to alter our mental culture to develop this mood of being in the world but not of the world, telling this mood of being possessed in our service and love to Guru Krishna and Sadhu, to be intoxicated and captivated with the mood of Raj, Divya Mata. I'm not sure which devotees are partners here, but if there's some partners who want to volunteer, that's even better. They may call in the particular pastor. Mangalati. Okay, can you both come up?
Krishna noticed that there was lots of bad omens, so he instructed the Yadavas to go to the Saraswati and do rituals, and they ended up getting intoxicated and arguing and killing each other. And then Lord Baladev left his body. He sort of come to the shore and he just left his body. And then Krishna, because he was so sad to see this, he sat down. When he sat down, a hunter mistook his left foot for a deer and shot an arrow through it. And then the hunter paid his obeisances and asked for forgiveness. But Krishna said it was okay because it was his desire. And then when Krishna was actually leaving his body, all the demigods came around in their airplanes and they were all hoping that Krishna would go back to their planet with them. And Krishna closed his eyes and pretended to be in samadhi, just to set an example for the yogis. And he actually was thinking, meditating on himself, and therefore he went back to his own abode. And the demigods, a lot of them couldn't see this, or the majority of them couldn't. It was only expansions of himself and Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma who perceived him leave his body like a thunderbolt, because they were actually had done all the proper preparations, sort of proper austerities, to be able to perceive Krishna at this time.
Okay, you guys got an easy one. You got a difficult one. Go ahead. Now, what's important lessons there and themes?
There are a few, and a few Sharon shared with me that Jiva Goswami said. We have like nine, so I'll just pick three. One is that Krishna did not go to the planet of the demigods. He went to Goloka, he went back to Vrindavan, so that we should also follow that example in terms of trying to see what our material, what our desires really are. Another thing is that Krishna loves the Brijbasis so much that, well, I guess this is the same thing, that he went to Vrindavan. So the lesson in that I felt is that I must also learn to love them too, and I must learn to become like them. A third lesson is that Shiva and Brahma were the only ones who could see the Lord descending to the abode, is that right? And a few others that could see, and it's explained that this was due to their austerities, that they could see it, but others could not. And so for me, what that meant in a personal way is that I remember being initiated for 2 months and thinking that I could see everything and everyone, and sort of felt like I was the instructor of every devotee. But in time, I could see that I actually don't know anything. So if Shiva and Brahma and a few others were the only ones who could see the Lord's actual, where he was going, it requires a lot of austerity and a lot of sincere dedication. I just want to give one last thing, because this is a really good one. He couldn't, the Lord, it said something about the Lord couldn't live without Balaram. And that, because Balaramji passed was one of the reasons that you gave, I think, that Krishna left. Okay, and so what that meant to me is about Nityananda Balaram, the guru, the spiritual master. I thought it was an important point not to offend the spiritual master, and also to cultivate the affection and the loving devotion for the spiritual master, because he's so dear to Krishna and his representative.
What's the other points you have? Just go through them real quick.
Really quick. Ultimately, Krishna's desire is behind everything. Because Krishna wanted to descend, he arranged the whole pastime just to facilitate his association with his loving devotees. He closed his eyes, Jiva Goswami explains, is to learn from that as an instruction to close our eyes to mystic opulences upon leaving the body. Another lesson to be derived from the pastime is being fixed on the Lord. And one last thing I think I had, yeah. No, this is it. That's all we got.
Wonderful.
You didn't have a normal one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you should share that one because you gave that.
As Krishna, even though when Baladev left his body, he actually fixed, and Krishna didn't. He just didn't do the burning body thing. He just went because he's not got a material.
Krishna Bhagavan ki. Okay. Let's do one more. Grandfather Bhishma. We're sorry we have you coming all over here to wonderful Vrindavan just to meditate every day on death. Well, we're really meditating on life. Dying to live.
So, Grandfather Bhishma, we all know, was a great warrior. And unfortunately, he was on the side of the Kurus. So When the great battle was commenced, then he had to die. And he died because he'd made an offense to one of the princesses. And the princess took rebirth as Shikhandi. And Arjuna was told to put Shikhandi in front of the chariot so that Bhima wouldn't fight against Shikhandi. And in this way, Arjuna was able to kill Bhima. So, oh, Bhishma, sorry, wrong word. Anyway, when Bhishmadev was lying on a bed of arrows, everybody came to pay their respects to him. The whole battle stopped, and Yudhisthira came, and there Bhishmadev taught him great instructions on how to rule his kingdom. And Draupadi also came along, and Draupadi asked Bhishmadev, "Oh, so now you're speaking very nice words, words of wisdom, but where were you when I was getting disrobed?" And Bhishmadev's answer was very special. He said that at that time I was eating Kaurava grains, so my intelligence was polluted. But now I've had my intelligence purified by seeing Lord Krishna. So now I can explain to you that it was because of eating the Kaurava grains that my intelligence was covered. So my partner will explain to you the significance of eating Kami grains of people that against Krishna.
I'd actually heard that at this point of Bhishmadev speaking, lying on the bed of arrows, that his body had somewhat reduced in size and he had bled away most of the body weight and muscle that had been put on from eating the Kaurava grains. And that was one analysis somebody was telling me. But one of the major themes that I found from the first canto, 9th chapter, text 1, was one of the translations where it reads, Bhishmadev merged himself with the Super Soul, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight, and actions, and thus he became silent, and his breath stopped. So it's very clear that his mind, speech, sight, and actions throughout the whole of his life built up to that moment of death. As we know, Bhishma was Dhritavrata, and he was the chief descendant of Bharat, and he was endowed with the blessing that he could leave whenever he wanted. But still, the fact that every single moment of our life, the words that we speak, sights and actions, enable us to come to that point, at the transition, that every action that we perform throughout our whole life will enable us to remember Krishna. And another major point that Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport there is that Bhishma, lying on the bed of arrows, remembered Krishna during the Rajasuya sacrifice. So it was a very significant event, very profound event where Lord Sri Krishna was being worshipped. And so that being a significant event and Krishna being the focal point also helped his mind in centralizing and focusing on Krishna.
Bhishmadev ki.
So we see from these passing stories, as we discussed earlier, how Prabhupada was saying that human life means to be able to pass or to die, leave this world the same way as Bhishma, or like Bhishma. But Bhishma's mind, his speech, his body, everything was absorbed in having the darshan with Krishna. Everything was absorbed in supplying or carrying out Krishna's desire for him to share his wisdom with Yudhisthira, that nothing, even though what had happened in the past with the war, even his body being a devastated situation, none of these things were such an issue. He He wasn't thinking about what he had to complete. He wasn't thinking about what went wrong. He wasn't thinking about how to redo this or redo that. Not really. But he was just so eager and absorbed in the darshan of Krishna. And as we know from the story, Bhishma explains that at some point everything will leave you. But the only thing will go with us is Dharma. The only thing will go with us is the karma that's connected with what actions and thoughts and associations that we have experienced. We realize that we acquire so many things, we're in anxiety about so many things, we make all kind of plans, and all of those things, all those relationships are going to, at some point, we are going to walk away from them, or they're going to walk away from us. And that's why we're looking at the hour that we have the chance to send a message, that in nobody's situation are we thinking about, well, make sure, tell them to make sure they pay the mortgage, tell them to make sure that they clean the house every day, you know, send a message to that the sari that I had made a down payment on, they should get it out, make sure that they don't, you know, to take my bangles, you know, complete the house that we wanted to have with the wonderful fence and the wonderful curtains, you know. None of those kind of things are there. But very essential, you know, relationship issues of such. You see, in the case of Haridas, the core, that his life, you know, was full of problems, problematic, even beat in the marketplaces. But we see how glorious that his passing was. Even Mahaprabhu himself, you know, carried him in this way. So, when you did your reflection, if you left the body and what message you would like people to say of you, about you, look at what is needed to make that happen, to become a reality. As you reflect on those significant persons that you would definitely want to connect with, especially if you had only that 1 hour, then think now what you need to do in areas to make that relationship better, to bring some closure, to make some type of resolutions. In some cases, you've got to bring closure. There's certain things that we are often pursuing and we're over-endeavoring. And there's certain relationships that we are timid about really revealing how we really feel. Or there's certain relationships we've been procrastinating and showing our appreciation, thinking that we'll have another opportunity at some other time, or waiting for the proper moment. We can wait and wait and wait, and one day, you know, we don't have any moments. So these kind of things that we're trying to do is just to help us to live more in the present, being able to accept more and more what is happening by having more faith in Krishna. When we're healthy, we thank Krishna that he's given us good health to serve him better. We're sick, we thank Krishna for allowing us to experience sickness so we can read more, we can be more introspective. When we are well, we'll be more alert. When we have money, we thank Krishna for making things easier for us, so we don't have to hustle so much for finance. We don't have money, we thank Krishna for keeping us in a situation where we have to be desperate and be more dependent upon him. When we're getting a lot of respect and a lot of fame, we thank Krishna for feeding our ego to help us to be more stimulated and motivated. We're infamous, we thank Krishna for helping us, you know, to be humbled in such a way. In other words, what we're really looking at is how to be less and less associated with the duality. Duality is there. Duality means material body. Duality means material existence. Duality means another existence going through the cycle of samsara. When Krishna says one who's dear to him is unaffected by happiness or distress, he never says that one who's dear isn't bombarded by all kinds of stuff. He didn't tell Arjuna, you just go sit down and you watch me destroy all these guys. Arjuna, you just go and meditate. Everything's going to be okay. No, but he brought Arjuna in a most trying, difficult situation and told him, you take the seed, the takaru. Now you do what's necessary. What is a more difficult conflict than war And what is a more difficult conflict than having to be in a very precarious situation with relatives, with friends, with those who normally you want to be binding with the most? What's more difficult than having to have those persons, you know, as adversaries? But Krishna is there. So this battle of Kurukshetra is a reminder to us about the war we have to deal with every day. It's a reminder to us that there's always the Maya elements trying to destroy us. It's a reminder to us there's always also alliances. There is relationships that can help us as we march on. There's always Krishna factor and Krishna there. And so from a lot of these passing times of pastimes of passing away, we see that such devotees were so focused and they were so glorious and how they came into this world, what they did. They took on human-like qualities, human-like experiences, mainly for us, so that we could be able to relate, identify, learn from such, and be able to align ourselves with such. So we are looking particularly at how to die daily, how each day that we do whatever we have to do with intensity, with competence. Because if we don't do things and use energies nicely and properly, then we will get more bombarded. If we don't use money, time, facilities, whatever paraphernalia, whatever aspect of Krishna's energies, if we don't use it nicely, then that's also a lack of appreciation. It's a lack of being proper Krishna conscious. It's a lack of accepting our own fields, battle of Kurukshetra. But we've all been given a certain kind of battle that's a part of our karma in this lifetime. And all of that is a test to see how much we're going to accept our pseudo-identity or our genuine identity. And these days it can become very complex as we're trying to save our temples, as we're dealing with legal lawsuits, as we're dealing with building projects, as we're dealing with lots of maintenance and management, as we're dealing with issues of economic growth and development and taking care of our children and getting finance for this or for that, that it can be overwhelming. And so we have to do all of these things as efficient, as effective as we can. But at the end of the day, we have to just have a mantra, simplify it. We have to have a mantra that all of this, behind all of this, is that I am something, an identity, bigger, greater, and outside of all of these things that I'm doing. And I have to be careful not to catch amnesia where I begin to identify too much with the drama that I'm participating in at this particular time. This drama is essential. It's a reality, but it's a temporary reality. So we're not to be in denial. Our drama or our battle of Kurukshetra is ours, and we have to deal with that. Those people who you have some significant message to give to or to share with, that's part of your drama now, and that's a reality. But now the question is the quality, of course, of the association, the quality of what is going on in our consciousness. So as we are in that mood of being really anti-material, that we're not really having any genuine material priorities that's interfering with our spiritual life. We don't have to be Babaji's. Because often denying avoiding interaction with material energy doesn't necessarily bring about one's deeper growth and realization. That's why we have so many yogis and gurus who come from India, go to Europe, go to the West, and they fall down, even though they've been brought up in ashrams and been the Naisiki brahmacharis. Because your strength does not show in avoidance, but has more to show when you are also subjected and you're not accepting or attaching yourself to it 100%. So real renunciation is not just in avoidance or not just running away, or being in denial. It's how much we are bringing and placing things before Krishna, using things for Krishna. As we use more and more everything for Krishna, then it's death to the material body. If you think about it, in one sense, austerity is a expression of death, that we are denying so much of orthodoxy, and we're saying birth and life to something transcendental and sublime. We really can't have both in terms of having the same fixation. There's nothing beautiful about poverty, nothing beautiful about austerity and simplicity on its own. But we simplify and we renounce so that we can be less attracted to the lower and have more facility to grab on to the higher. So as we're bringing some mental death to so many of the temporary things, we're really bringing life to opening ourselves up to be greater, greater receivers of our original identity, and greater receivers for facilities and for transmissions and for associations that can give proper watering, you know, to the Bhakti Lata Bija. So our homework assignment. Now tomorrow, there's the inauguration of the festival. So we won't meet at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Tomorrow's the 20th.
At
4:30, rather, yes, 4:30 to 6. But we're going to meet the day after. So our last class will be on the 21st, not the 20th. And try to come, because we have one extremely important exercise that I think is more important than any of the exercises that we've done, you know, up to this point. And we want to bring some closure to some of the things that we've discussed so far. So we have one more day. So we won't come tomorrow, but the next day from 4:30 to 6 on the 21st. So your homework assignment is that I want you to write a letter to someone who is deceased. I want you to write a letter in your own way, some communication that you want to express, have with someone who is deceased. Okay. The question on the homework assignment? Yes. Someone who is dead, who has left the body. Okay? So to someone who is dear to you, was dear to you, still is, hopefully, who has left the body, we want you to write a special letter. You just reflect on what kind of communication you want to have with that particular person. Mm-hmm. No, 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 no.
Deceased.
The person that left the body.
I was thinking
of
protection in the future.
No, in the future. This is a tangible case of someone who was in the physical, they've gone on, hopefully back to the spiritual world, but they've left the body, but you're going to have some special communication. Considering that this person will be able to receive, the letter that you're writing. In some cases, they will. You write a letter your own way to someone who has passed that you want to give and send a message to, right? So that with the understanding that this person very likely can be able to receive this message. Any other question about this assignment?
Yes.
You're not anyone? There's nobody in this room who doesn't know anybody who hasn't left the body. If you think about it. Yeah, okay, even if they're not so close. But you had a letter. If you don't have someone who was rather close to you who left the body, then you write someone who's kind of close. But you write to someone who had some impact in your life, somehow, some association with that person. You know, but they've left the body now. Okay? Doesn't have to be better if it's someone very close to you, but if not, someone who you have interacted with, you know, but they have gone, they left the body. Yes?
Should you try to have a certain
blame? No, it's up to you. It's up to you. You know, excuse me, you don't have to write a book, but just some, a few paragraphs of special communication you want to have with that particular person. Just as we mentioned, we raise hands, we ask some of you who feel that you're having some communication with someone who's left, and some people, you know, do have that, and it is possible. And there, many times as devotees, we're having a lot of assistance that we're not aware of. When you take the Krishna consciousness, there is so much help that we get. Krishna is appearing in incarnation as a Shastra, we get Sadhu, you know, we get Guru, we get the whole parampara, you know, that we're connected with. And just like there's postmen, and there's garbage men, there's plumbers and electricians, there's special entities who also, they're great yogis, they're great devotees, who sometimes are not even ever in the physical, at least in our lifetimes, who have duties, you know, to assist us. Even some of, this is being recorded, even some of the devotees who've left their body, who were devotees, even some of the gurus who've left their body, even some devotees who've been in our communities, have distinct responsibility for souls who are still in this movement now. And they will reach out in different ways, you know, to assist. Iskand Founder, Chaudhary, Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Sri Prabhupada Ki.